This podcast is brought to you by Villanova University on iTunes U. Please visit us on itunes.villanova.edu.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. It's great to see you all here. My name is Melinda German, Associate Dean for the Undergraduate Programs in Business. Dean Wright apologizes. He was called out of town and could not be here with us tonight. I'd like to extend a special thank you to my colleagues in the Clay Center and to all the finance societies for co-sponsoring this event, and a very special thank you to the Villanova Financial Club. This event has been going on for 12 years because of the Financial Club. And if you put that in perspective, some of you 12 years ago, I don't know how old you were, 6, 7, 8, think about that. That's how long these folks have come out here and worked with our students. The Financial Club is basically a group of Villanova alumni who work in financial services. They came up with this brainchild, this particular program, to help our students across the university prepare for interviews on Wall Street. And it is because of these folks that so many of our students have gone on to land great internships and great jobs across the financial services arena. Tonight's program is truly one of many that our alumni do to support our students, and we are forever grateful to each and every one of them. Thank you so much for being here. I want to congratulate everybody here tonight who's come out to participate in this event. You will learn a lot of good insider information that you can then put to good use. Take advantage of everything this night has to offer. Please don't just stay for the panel and scoot out after that. There is a networking reception, and you'll learn just as much at the networking reception, meeting some of the friends and alumni that have come out here. It's a great benefit to you, so please do take advantage of that. So, without further ado, I would like to turn the program over to Todd Sullivan, who is Managing Director at Morgan Stanley. He's been involved with this program for quite a while, and he will open the program and introduce our panelists. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. See if we got, there we go. So, up here we have my panelists listed. I'm going to ask each of you, as we'll work down the way, Tom, from you this way, introducing each of yourselves. I'm going to start with a couple things which I think all the panelists would agree with me on. One, thank you. All of you, every year, make us look a hell of a lot smarter than we actually are. This is a lot harder school to get into now, certainly than it was when Steve and I got in. And I won't necessarily throw the other three in the same bucket with us, but this is a lot tougher school to get into. It's a lot tougher school to graduate from. So thank you very much. You do make us look better every year, and I appreciate it. It's part of the reason we come back to help. Two, I have been doing this. I think I've been on this panel now for 6 or 7 years. It is a phenomenal experience. I wish it existed when I was here. I got where I am by dumb luck in the first couple steps. So hopefully you guys get a leg up on dumb luck. With some of the tips and techniques we give you tonight. And this, as the dean just said, this is not the only thing we do during the year. There's lots of experiences, lots of opportunities to meet with the Villanova Finance Club and other alumni who are very actively involved on this campus. One of the most powerful things you have in your network is that you go to Villanova. There are lots of us who are very passionate about this school and helping you be successful, because the more successful you are, the more successful we are. Okay? And we mean it. So we'll start. Tom, you want to introduce yourself? Just give a couple minutes about what you do and the part of the business you're involved in?
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Tesoro. I graduated in 2012. I was a finance major. I work at Goldman Sachs. I've been there for a little over 3 years now, directly out of undergrad here. I work in investment-grade credit sales within the FICC division, fixed income, currencies, and commodities. And I played baseball here for 3 years. I hope there are other athletes in the room. I can certainly relate. thanks for having me.
I am Steve Hanwacker. I graduated 2001 from Villanova. I work at Merrill Lynch in New York City. I'm on a wealth management team. There's three advisors, one assistant. And essentially what we do on a daily basis is work with our clients to help them achieve whatever goal they're looking to hit. These goals are anywhere from estate planning, retirement, education planning, asset allocation goals. So we cover a lot of ground with all of our clients, and we basically make their lives easier and help them on a daily basis.
Hi, I'm Leslie Graham. I work for Bank of America. I started right after graduation in 2011. I started there with a finance management program, so I'm in the corporate finance group, currently working with the credit card portfolio, specifically on existing accounts, and what we do is forecasting, planning, investment decisioning, valuation, so basically all the hot topic items you hear about in your finance classes, that's what sits within the finance shop at Bank of America.
Hey, I'm Andrew Esposito. I graduated in 2011. And I've been with Jefferies Finance the last 4 years. Jefferies Finance is Jefferies' credit underwriting group. So any, probably familiar with leverage buyouts, any committed transaction that Jefferies does, our group's the one that does all the underwriting work, you know, the background on the company, going through the financial models, and really just making sure that our credit underwriting committee is fully aware of everything that this company can and cannot do, and that eventually, you know, they'll be able to pay back the loans that we provide to those companies.
Thank you all. I have slides for each of them, and you'll each get a copy of the deck. So you'll have, you know, kind of 2-3 bullet points of who each of us is. I'm managing director at Morgan Stanley. I run a division called securities operations for the institutional business. That's the traditional investment banking part of Morgan Stanley. And I'm responsible for all of the operations supporting our cash equity, fixed income, financing, and syndicate. Businesses, so IPOs, bond issuances, as well as secondary trading in equity and fixed income securities. I graduated from Villanova in 1995. I started my career at Lehman Brothers. I spent almost 10 years there in about 9 different jobs and operations and moved to Morgan Stanley in 2004. Since joining Morgan Stanley, I've run all the fixed income derivatives, so I've done a lot of the same things and been around a lot of the same things that Tom's worked on. And then took over the securities job about 2 years ago. So, if anyone wants to talk about any of those things, you've now got an idea of what some of us do here. I'm going to take you through now is some of the rest of what happens on Wall Street, give you an idea. How many of you are not VSB students? We have to do better in marketing than non-VSB students. How about that? It doesn't surprise me the VSB students are all here, because as I've explained to a couple of ladies over here that interned for me last summer, I can beat you guys with sticks and you still show up for the interviews. I've been trying to get some of your colleagues in the other colleges, so after you leave here tonight, if you've got friends who are interested in careers in business, maybe pass off a copy of the deck so they have an idea of who to talk to and what Villanova alums would be interested in helping them. I'm going to take you through what probably for all of you VSB students is going to be a little bit of basics, a little bit about the different parts of investment banks and financial services industry, what we do. The main message is to show you that all of our jobs are not all sales and trading and banking. Okay, that's not where all the opportunities are on Wall Street. Most financial institutions, and certainly the big banks, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, UBS, Merrill Lynch, B of A, are set up in a structure like this. They're multidimensional. They've got lots of different businesses. I'm going to take you through each one of them. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail. There's a lot in the slides. You can look at that. But there's a brief description of each part. And as we get to the second half of this presentation, where we give you the answers to the test, you'll understand why I'm giving you this background information. So investment banking, so this is the part, the ISG part of the business. It's capital raising, sales trading, prime brokerage, research. It's what you would traditionally think of if you looked back into the 1980s and thought about Wall Street. Okay? It's not retail stock brokerage. This is the institutional side of it. Okay? This is bankers who are doing deals, M&A, advisory services, raising debt, raising equity capital, sales and trading operations, so where Tom's working. Prime brokerage, which is offering banking, leverage, and operational services to clients, and then research. So it's publishing research, getting customers, mostly institutional customers, ideas on what to do. That is one piece of the financial services business. It is a place where there are jobs, but there are a lot fewer jobs there than there used to be, and there are a lot fewer jobs there than there are in the rest of the bank combined. So I'm going to show you some stats from Morgan Stanley in a minute, just give you an idea of where the jobs are. We get into the next one here is private banking and wealth management. This is where Steve works. Bill Donnell, who's one of the founding members of the Villanova Finance Club, is also in wealth management, also at B of A. This business is basically, it's high net worth or wealthy individual investment advising. As Steve said, it's about problem solving, it's about working with your clients. It's a much more person-to-person retail business. And I don't mean retail, I mean small, I mean direct point of sale, right? It's personal relationships. Steve and I were talking about, what does it take to grow a business? I mean, 10 years of talking to somebody before you might get the first check? Yeah. That's a very different business model than my career, okay? So if things like that scare you, don't talk to Steve. If those things like those interest you, you might have an opportunity. That's not a job I could do, but it takes a specific skill set, it takes a specific personality, but you can be highly successful. We get to asset management. So this is asset management, investment management. It sometimes looks like mutual funds. It sometimes looks like hedge funds or funds of funds within a bank. It sometimes looks like private equity. This is investment vehicles managed by an institution for sometimes their high net worth customers, sometimes outside institutional investors, sometimes just direct investors into those funds. But this is a business where they directly manage assets and investments for customers. Shared services, which is where I work, it is where Leslie works, the way it's been defined here. It's legal and compliance, it's finance, it's operations, it's technology, it's human resources. There are probably dozens more that I'm offending on the street who haven't gotten their own category in this bucket here. But these jobs here are all the things that actually make the institutions work. It is the places that are growing. It is the places that have more headcount now than they used to, and frankly, in many cases, have more headcount than groups like sales, trading, banking do. If you look at financial services and Wall Street today, you will see that the shift of headcount, the shift of resources, has moved away from the risk-taking, transaction executing, and moved towards compliance, enforcement, technology, support services, control. Right? And so what you're seeing now is growth in places like legal and compliance, growth like places like finance. Leslie's going to talk a little bit when I'm sure some of you will have questions about careers in finance. The program she's in is going to give her opportunities to see financial control groups, modeling, forecasting, business prediction, right? Things that you've studied in finance class but didn't know we actually do in the real world on Wall Street. Those are the kind of things done in the finance division, which is part of shared services. In operations, we've got a 1,600-man organization, man and woman organization, supporting both the institutional and wealth management business. Sorry, that's just the institutional business at Morgan Stanley. 1,600 jobs. I think fixed income is probably closer to 1,000. We outnumber the fixed income business. We outnumber the equity business. You put them both together, maybe not so, but it's a huge manpower organization. Executing what has become a much more important part of this business. These have all developed into professions in their own right. When I started in this business a little over 20 years ago, these were places you started in order to get a job in one of the revenue centers. The reality is these jobs have become as important or more important in some cases than some of the sales, trading, and relationship functions. And they have become, a profession in their own right. This is the hiring profile for Morgan Stanley this year. We hired in North America, firm-wide, full-time analyst hires. Investment banking did hire the most. They hired 101 analysts this year. Okay? In operations, we hired 90. In the company, which company is going to include things like administration, cost reduction, community affairs, a lot of the backbone of the company, another 69. Fixed income, so sales, trading, and fixed income, hired 51. Technology and data, 48. Global capital markets, which is a subset of banking, 38. Institutional equity, so your equity sales and trading team, only hired 29. Wealth management, 23 more, and that's a skewed statistic because that only covers Manhattan. When you go across the whole country, they hired a lot more analysts. We have about 17,000 FAs, so I'm positive we hired more than 23 analysts this year. Investment management, 14, that is our managed funds, private equity, mutual fund business. Research, 11. BRM is the repo business, so that's financing, 6 in North America, 6 jobs. And commodities, too. This isn't meant to scare anybody. It is meant to show you the distribution of where the jobs are. The reality is if you look in the top 3, 2 out of 3 are not revenue generating. Okay? That's where the jobs are on Wall Street, and it is a place where you can learn and build a career. Because trust me, our jobs are important. They're just different. If you're thinking about how do you get into financial services, how do you get from a Villanova to Wall Street or any of the financial centers in the country, the way you're going to do it is keeping your options open and thinking about the different types of jobs available. This is a data point to keep in mind. I'm going to next talk to you about preparing for the interview. And this is the reason why I gave you that little bit of prep. The reason this program was created 12 years ago is because George and Bill and I and a number of other alumni came back here and started recruiting at Villanova to hire Villanova students. Because we all went here and we were kind of biased and thought we were pretty smart and that we were worth hiring. And so we figured there were more students here that we'd want to hire. And when we came to talk to students, we were right. They're smart. You guys are intelligent. You're well-educated. You're well-read. You're hardworking. You've got good work ethic. But you didn't know how to interview on Wall Street. Now, I was talking to Melanie. I think it's Melanie, our camera person there earlier. It was not necessarily known that Wall Street has a culture and has expectations about how you behave when you come talk to us. Maybe we're a little bit elitist. Maybe we're a little bit closed-minded. But we do have a bias as to what we expect. And when you go to schools like Penn, and you go to schools like Columbia and Princeton, they are bred from freshman year to know how to behave when they go to an interview on Wall Street. And we didn't teach anybody that at Villanova. So when you all came, you were smart, and you were well-read, and you were hardworking, and you had a great work ethic, and you had a great attitude, but you wore things like purple shirts, and no tie, and maybe khakis and a button-down instead of a suit. And prepping the student, you know, when you walked in, if you weren't talking to a Villanova alum, and you weren't talking to somebody who was biased to want to hire a Villanova student, you were having a hard time getting jobs. And what we did with this program, and a lot of what we've been doing with the Villanova Finance Club, is about educating the students on, well, here's the rules. This is how it works, right? It doesn't mean you have to do these things to be successful, but I'm trying to up the odds so that you're much more likely to be successful. And so when we get through some of these basics, and again, they're going to be in the deck. You're going to get copies of them. I'm not going to read all of them to you, but I want you to think about what we're doing when we sit across the table from you. And then I want you to ask questions of the panel. Because, you know, Steve and I have been doing this for a while, right? There are other three panelists. This is the first year we've got three panelists that are within 5 years of you guys, right? We've got two class of 11 and one class of 12 people up here. They've been through this process. They've learned a lot. Steve and I have been doing interviews for years. Any of you guys actually actively interviewing too? All right, terrific. So we've got both. They're familiar with both sides of the table. It's been a long time since I sat in your seat. But I do sit in the other seat a lot. So I'm happy to answer questions on that. And that's the point here. We're going to go through some of these things I want you to think about and things I want you to recognize we're looking for. But then I want you to ask questions about how you can set yourself up for success. Okay? So what do we look for in interns and full-timers? Well, let's start with why I put intern and full-time analysts. At Morgan Stanley, about 80 to 85% of our full-time hires come through our internship program. So how many of you are seniors? Well, the four that already have jobs, I'm not worried about. For the rest of you guys who, if you don't have jobs, I'm telling you now, it's a steep uphill climb right now. Because jobs come from internships. Internship interviews happen in the spring semester of your junior year. Okay? That's probably the most important part of your interviewing schedule is going to be the spring of your junior year. You want to learn all the answers you can learn before then. You want to ask all the questions you can ask before then. If you are a senior, it is possible, right? I will be back on campus at some point this fall. I'll hire one or two more Villanova students. But most of the hiring I need to do, I already did last spring, and they worked for me all summer, and most of them got job offers, and that's who's going to be my full-time analyst next year. Okay? For those of you who are not yet seniors, that's the schedule you should be thinking to. So it's about interns and full-time hires, because we do hire both. But internships is probably the most important because that's the widest doorway for you to walk through to get a job on Wall Street. Okay, we look at leadership roles, we look at grades, we look at awards, we look at varsity sports, looking for leadership, those kinds of things, work experience, test scores. Okay, what does that mean about Villanova? So what do you do on campus? What kind of recognition have you got? What kind of things are you associated with? What student organizations are you in? What teams do you play on? All right, are you playing sports? Tom was talking about playing baseball here for 3 years. Right, if you walk in as an athlete from Villanova and you're sitting across the table from Tom, you've already got a connection. Right, you got things you can talk about. You can talk, but make sure you can talk about it. Right, have a story for the things that are on your resume. Think about philanthropy, so Blue Key Society, Balloon Day, Special Olympics, Campus Ministries, any of these things. When you talk to an interviewer, especially if you're talking to an alumni interviewer, try to find some connections. Try to find some places where you can highlight what you've done and things that they're going to recognize from their experience on campus. Okay? If you look at the last box here, this is the one place where I edited George's slides a little bit. I added some new things here, although we weren't very successful in getting non-VSB students here tonight. Bridge Society in the Arts and Sciences School is a place where we can build networks to people who are non-business students interested in careers in business. They have networking events. They have a leadership group just like the Equity and Fixed Income Societies. There's a Bridge Society. They have leadership groups. Get involved in these organizations. They're going to introduce you to alumni. They're going to introduce you to alumni who spend time here. And by the way, those are the alumni who come back to hire. Okay. Five core competencies we look for: leadership, results orientation, intellect and problem solving, technical knowledge, and collaboration. Not all five are equally important for every role. I would suggest if you're probably interviewing for a finance program, your technical knowledge around finance rules, finance theory, finance accounting rules is going to be more important than it is when you come talk to me in operations. Understanding what we do in operations, understanding what operations is different from sales and trading is going to be important. So understanding the business, less about technical skills for me. Working together as a team, being able to demonstrate that through collaboration and group projects, I mean, most of your classes require these things, are going to be much more important for an organization like mine where I got 475 people around the world working on solving problems. That's what we do in operations. Intellect and problem solving. The good part about the intellect is you're here. You're somewhat self-selected. You're all smart. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. Okay. The key for that point there is how do you differentiate yourself, right? So it is about grades sometimes. It is about doing things that are above and beyond, a little bit harder. Results orientation, again, talking about what you've accomplished and having a story for what you've done and being able to tell that story. And then obviously leadership, as I talked about, societies, organizations, activities, and playing a role other than being a member of everything. Interview best practice and tips. So research in advance. Do your homework. Okay. I'll now sound like a father. School is not that hard. Okay. You can add a little bit of time before interview season to learn about the companies you're going to interview with. Understand what we do. Understand what division you're interviewing with. Understand who some of the people are. Career Center is pretty good about telling you who it is that's coming to interview. Find out if they're alumni. If they are, Google them. If they're not, Google them. Find out if they've got anything published, if they've done anything. Be amazed how many Villanova students, when they come to see me in an interview, have already Googled and found out that this video from some year, you know, last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is on the web somewhere, and you can see it. I was sitting in one of those seats for all those years, but getting to see those things, maybe hear something I said in one of those speeches and then repeat it back to me in an interview makes a big statement, okay? Find out what people have done. Most of us are involved in some way in the industry. We get our name printed in something. We're on a panel for something. We get quoted in something. You know, it gives you opportunities to have an icebreaker to open up a relationship with the person you're meeting with. So understand what's going on in the company. Understand what's going on in the industry. Know the position, okay? And this is critically important. If you're coming to work or interview to work for me in operations or Leslie in finance, don't come in and tell me you want to be a banker, right? If you go on an interview with Tom, don't talk about the equity markets. He's a credit guy in fixed income. Talk about why you've always wanted to read the credit market section of the Wall Street Journal first, right? Talk about why that's the most interesting thing and, you know, how it is that you've found in every single paper you've ever read that, you know, says that prices and yields move in the opposite direction and somewhere in that section of the Wall Street Journal every single day. If you want to talk about deals, right, you're going to come talk to Anthony. That's Andrew. That's all about, you know, understanding how he thinks about, and you're going to ask him questions about how he thinks about deals. Understand what he does and understand what the role is that you're interviewing for. Okay? And please, this does not happen often at Villanova, but it does happen a lot when I interview. Understand which firm you're interviewing for. Don't tell me how much you want to work at Goldman Sachs. Okay? There's a particular animosity between the two firms. We can sit on the same panel, but that's about it. and then know your resume. This is an important one. This is the part where you guys, it's not about me giving you the answers. It says you wrote the answers. But know what's on your resume and know why you put it there. Right? Have a story that connects to some part of what we're looking for, the leadership, your results orientation, your academic achievements, right? Why'd you put it on the resume? Have a little story about it, okay? Because that's what the interview is. The interview is about me trying to get you to talk about what's on your resume, talk about what you've done, so I can make a decision that I want to buy you, right? That's what this is. You're on a 22-minute sales pitch, okay? We tell you you got a half-hour interview. You can't talk for more than 22 minutes. It's not possible. I'm going to walk you in the room a couple minutes late, and I'm going to walk you out a couple minutes early so I can do some paperwork. And in the meantime, I'm going to ask a couple questions. So maybe you're going to get 22 minutes to talk. In those 22 minutes, it's a sales pitch, right? So think about what you're selling and think about how you're going to sell it, because it's you. Think like the interviewer. So remember why we're there, right? Understand that we're trying to figure out whether or not we want to buy you. Okay? You're also trying to figure out something about us. You're trying to figure out something about our company, and you're going to come in having questions to ask us, but make sure you think about why you're asking those questions. If you ask a completely generic question in the interview that you ask in every single interview, it's probably not helping you understand much about that job. Those are the types of questions that get better asked in the pre-night, the night before. All right, when you get to meet with somebody, or you get introduced to somebody, or you go to an analyst panel, maybe we bring some recent grads back here to talk about what they do. Those are times to ask the generic questions. You want to ask me questions that are impactful that I'll remember about you. Okay? First impressions, dress to impress. I joked about it a little bit before. No eggplant shirts. Okay? No mauve shirts. I can wear maybe a mauve tie once in a while. You can't. Not yet. Okay? Gray or blue suit, white shirt, red or blue tie. Simple. Right? And women, a similarly appropriate outfit. Get your shirt pressed. I don't know what they're now. Maybe it's $1.75. Maybe it's $2. Get your shirt pressed. All right. Have the suit pressed. Have your shirt pressed. Okay. Suit pressing, if you hang it back up when you get home, now I'm going to sound like your mother. If you hang it back up when you get home, it probably lasts through interview season. Okay. Get the shirt pressed each time you wear it. Okay. Send it out to the laundry. There's laundry delivery services around here. Get it cleaned. Makes a big difference. Okay. Nobody's ever not gotten a job because the suit looked too good. Okay. Proper decorum. I did for the first time in a long time when I sat down here. I turned off both my cell phones, put them on the table. All right. When you walk into an interview, make sure your cell phones are on silent at a minimum, if not off. I know you think they're just on vibrate. I can hear the vibrate. I also can see your face change when you're wondering, like, who's calling and you want to touch it and you can't because you know you're not supposed to. Just turn it off. It's 30 minutes of your life. Review your resume, know what's on there. How many of you guys smoke? I'm not gonna remember, be honest, put your hands up. How many of you smoke? Seriously? That's awesome. Now I sound like a dad again. I used to smoke a lot, okay? Don't smoke before you go into an interview. There is no upside to it, okay? If you can last an hour, and I hope you can, chew some gum, don't smoke for an hour, go do your interview, then you can light up right afterwards. I don't care. You are never going to offend anybody by not smelling like cigarette smoke. Okay? Some people hate it, and some people are like me. I was a 20-year, three-pack-a-day smoker. You're going to piss me off if you come in smelling like cigarettes because I can smell them a mile away. Okay? So don't smoke before the interview. Don't chew gum during the interview. When the interviewer comes out, and typically it'll feel like you're in the gauntlet. You'll be sitting in some kind of holding pen, maybe with some keepers around you. We call them analysts, but some keepers that are sort of watching what you're doing. And trust me, they're interviewing you too. When the door opens, if you know which door is for you, stand up. If you don't, stand up anyway, because it might be for you. All right? Introduce yourself, put your hand out, reach out, say. We try not to make it feel like you're a caged animal, but it is going to be a little bit intimidating sometimes. All right? But don't be the guy I got to ask if you're John, and are you going to come in now and talk to me? Seem eager. Seem enthusiastic about it. Walk over, firm, dry handshake. I know the dry part can be difficult. This can be a nerve-wracking experience. Keep a tissue in your pocket or something. It's kind of off-putting, I'm sure, for you too, if you get a wet, clammy handshake. Think about that. Right? Put yourself in our position. We're reasonable people generally, but anything you can do to not stand out on the negative side is going to help. Look me in the eye and introduce yourself. If you're in a place, if you're in any kind of setting that has name tags, right-hand side. Not left. Everybody always puts them on the left, which totally natural human behavior. Most of the panelists probably got them on the left, right? Yeah. Put them on the right, because when you go to shake somebody's hand, you shake with your right hand. You reach with your right, you're looking at their right hand, their name tag is right there. When they come here, they're seeing your name. Okay? It avoids the whole awkward, hey, looking for a name. So if you put it on the right, it makes it easier for people to see your name. Smile. It's a big one, right? Changes attitudes completely. Have questions ready for the interviewer, right? Think about what you want to ask. If you've done some research about them, this is the time to show off, right? This is the time to say, I read this piece that you wrote, or I saw a video where you spoke at this event, and you raised an interesting point. Can you tell me some more about that? Right? Or you can tell me how it is that that topic affects your day-to-day job, right? Think about who you're asking the question of. If you're interviewing with somebody who's a class of 11, class of 12, class of 10 grad this year, you can ask questions like, so what is a day in the program you've been in like? Right? What is it like to be in the program you're in? If you ask me what a typical day in your life is, my wife doesn't even care. I don't know why you would care. You're 22 years from doing what I'm doing. So it's not really, think about what you're gonna get from asking that question. Because asking me to explain a typical day doesn't do anything but, you know, if you're writing my bio, I guess, you can write something about me, but it's not gonna help you understand what your job's gonna be like. When you're talking to a recent grad, you're talking to an analyst, you're talking about somebody who's in the program you're applying to get into, it's useful information. You might ask questions of, are there people here today that have been through this recently that I can talk to after I'm done with the interview? That's actually a reasonable and intelligent question to ask. Right? For any of you who want to know about Morgan Stanley and working for Morgan Stanley in operations, there's four young women over here who all worked for me last summer. Right? And they've all got jobs after graduation, coming back to work for us again. So you can ask them about what it's like. Sorry, I told you I'd put you to work. And then when you finish the interview and you've asked your questions and you've talked to the interviewer and you've filled your 30 minutes, you're not done. Okay? Write a thank you note. It's amazing, and I was just talking to Brenda earlier, and I come down every year for the SBI, and I teach or do a sort of just-in-time networking class for the Summer Business Institute students. And every year I do it, I tell people, I really like thank you notes. And any Villanova student who sends me a thank you note, I save those thank you notes, and at some point in the future, you need something, and you call me, and you say, Todd, you know, I'd like help with an interview, I'd like to get introduced to somebody, I'd like to network, can I come talk to you? I look through that pile. And if I had spoken to you at some point, especially if you tell me, you know, you came and spoke to my SBI class, or you spoke at a Bridge Society event, or if you sent me a thank you note, I would move mountains to help you, right? You went to Villanova, which helps. But if you actually took the time to send the thank you note when you had nothing to do but just thank me, right? I keep those, and they move with me as I go from job to job. I go through that list, and if you sent me one of those notes, I will do everything in my power to help you. If you didn't, it goes on that list of stuff I got to do eventually, okay? Every year, I come and talk to the SBI class, and every year, I speak to almost 100 students, and every year, there's fewer than 10 who send me thank you notes. Now, that's a free option, right? Not everybody will give you that option for that cheap a price, but I'm telling you, that's the price of the option on my time. Okay? Write me a thank you note. Tell me you appreciated me coming down and doing this. Most alumni, most interviewers, most people who are involved in recruiting have a similar kind of payback for you doing something simple as saying thank you. Okay? This is our second job for all of us. Okay? We all have day jobs, and we do this because we want to help, but we also do it because we like to be thanked for doing it. We like to be appreciated. So when somebody interviews you, whether they give you a job or not, you send them a thank you note, you are never going to do any harm. I'm not telling you'll ever know what the value of that thank you note was, but you will not do any harm, I assure you. Okay? Now, the next page just says the word questions on it. And before we get to that, I want to walk you through a couple of things, just logistics, and then I do hope you're going to ask some questions to the panelists. Logistics are most of the interviewing, certainly for the bigger banks, work in a form of on-campus interviews for first round, which means there's a resume drop date. You have to apply for a job. You put your resume in. You fill out the application if there is one, and you hope to be selected. Okay? You're going to apply for lots of programs, lots of jobs, because you want to get as many opportunities as you can. If you get called for an interview, those interviews typically happen on campus, the Career Center usually. Sometimes they're in Bartley, but usually in the Career Center. And you'll meet with one or two people typically in that first round. And those are what they usually call professional fit interviews. We decide whether or not we even want to talk to you anymore. Okay? Those sometimes are done by alumni who actually know the jobs. Sometimes they're done by human resources, people who are professionals at screening candidates. Okay? And typically after that, there's a weed down process and a selection for second round interviews. Okay? If you get called for second round interviews, Morgan Stanley, because we interview so many people at the same time when we come to campus, we will do second rounds here on campus as well. The interviews tend to be different. They're obviously much more competitive. And it's after that you typically have a selection day. other companies will do, they'll come here for first round, they might interview a dozen kids first round, pick four that they're going to call back to a second round. That second round is back at their headquarters, and it's called a super day. Okay? You might be involved there where you get called back to a super day. It might be on a Monday or a Friday, or it might be on a Saturday or Sunday. And you come into, I know Credit Suisse does it this way, some of the, Goldman might do some. Certainly most of the revenue centers, the trading, sales, banking, tend to do these super days on campus, meaning on their headquarters, where they'll bring back the four Villanova students and the four kids from Penn and the four kids from Princeton and a couple from Columbia and a couple from Harvard, and they all come in, and then you're competing against all of those other students in that second round interview for the final decision. Okay? If you get called for that, know that the dynamics change. When you're here, it's all Villanova students. It's your friends sitting in that holding area waiting with you. You can talk a little bit. Might be some alumni there that you can talk with, and maybe people you know. When you're at Super Day, it's going to be intimidating. You're in a room with a whole bunch of people you don't know, and you know you're all competing for the same job. Okay? That's just the logistics of how that works. And now I will open it up for questions, and hopefully you guys have some questions for us. What's that? Harvard, Princeton, Yale?
Yeah.
They don't get their own acronym. I don't give a shit about them.
What should we do to, I guess, you know, build our brand when we're at Super Day and kind of get a leg up on competition, I guess?
You want to talk about Tom?
I do think that, you know, especially I'm surrounded by those, you know, Princeton, Harvard, Yale grads all day long. And, I'll tell you that a lot of the ones that I, you know, was started out as an analyst with are really no longer with the firm either because they did something on their own. They went to a startup, whatever it may be. So I actually think Villanovans are actually a distinct advantage when it comes to, you know, competing against Harvard, Princeton, Yale, just because it seems like there's a little more hunger and drive. I know from my perspective, you know, it wasn't easy. I wasn't the smartest guy in the room. I played sports and I tried to find, you know, my way in. So I would have, you know, as we've spoken about a couple times up here, I would have, you know, your story down pat and try to have a unique spin on things. Unfortunately, there's no one way of doing it, but, you know, you really just have to dig deep and see what it is that you're interested in doing and relate it to your story. So,
anybody else want to?
Yeah, I can touch on it. You know, Tom kind of touched on it a little bit, but I think Villanova students have an advantage in that you all have great personalities, right? Not every single person that goes to those Ivy League universities has the personality that you all do and joined all the clubs that you do. You know, they may be quants, I've spoken to many, and not just, you know, specific to the Ivies, but sometimes you'll get in touch with people and they just don't have a personality. You can't relate to them, you know, in an interview. So your job, when you're in that interview, again, Todd said it, but it's to sell yourself. So part of that is not just selling that, you know, you're the guy that will be able to run the model. It's you're the guy I want to work with at 2 a.m. You've got a personality. We can talk fantasy football. We can talk anything. And that's going to be what differentiates you, because I'm never going to remember that you got the brain teaser question right and somebody else didn't, but I am going to remember that we were able to reminisce over, you know, you went to Georgetown, I went to Villanova, and we talked NCAA basketball. Like, that's going to be what I remember. So make sure you're up to date on everything on your resume, you can speak to all your hobbies, because eventually somebody's going to go, you know, what do I want to talk about? Oh, I've got that in common with them. So you want to be able to latch on to that and run with it, because the more you have in common with that person, the better chance they check the yes box when.
The other thing I would add is there's little to do that day. You know, when you show up for the super day, there's not a whole lot you can do other than, you know, being yourself, being an interesting person that somebody wants to hire. It's been one of my most compelling stories when people ask me how I went from being a political science major at Villanova to having a career on Wall Street. And my stock answer to that is, well, I'm a hell of a lot more interesting at a cocktail party than somebody that studied finance for 4 years. I can talk about politics, I can talk about, you know, history, I can talk about, you know, military events. It's a lot more fun than talking about Black-Scholes model. The prep you can do ahead of time, though, is to take advantage of the tens of thousands of Villanova alums that are working in and around the financial services industry. We are a passionate alumni network, right? Find out who from Villanova works at the company that you get called back for a super day at and talk to them, right? Find out who's in that division that you're interviewing for a job in, whether it's fixed income sales and trading, or it's equity sales and trading, or capital markets, or operations, or finance. Find some Villanova alums, start cold calling them, and asking if they can help you understand, you know, can you come in for an informational interview? Can you do some just-in-time homework, right? And who knows, you might actually have a connection with some of these people, and they can put a call in for you, right? Trust me, it helps, right? Having a network to lean on, and having somebody who can say, yeah, I know him, and or he's gone through the same course of study I did, I know it's really tough, it's a smart kid, I want to meet with him first, or let me get on his interview schedule, right? All of those things help dramatically, because it takes what was otherwise a 22-minute experience somebody has, and that's it, to some other things they can connect to you and give you credit for. Okay?
I'm curious. You mentioned that when for the interview day, you only want to show up in a navy suit, you know, white shirt, and a simple tie. I'm curious, like, is it not an idea to, like, show up in, like, maybe something a little bit, not necessarily over the top, but something more memorable? I'm just curious. It could be...
I don't know.
So I have a story with that one. When we were interviewing, you know, he was dressed appropriately, but he had a pen behind his ear. And we talked about him the rest of the time as the guy with the pen behind his ear. And it wasn't something, it was a differentiator, but not in a good way. Someone straight up said, I don't think I want to work with the type of person who wants to sit across from an executive and interview with a pen behind their ear. So you want to always be aware of how you're differentiating yourself. Probably don't do it through your dress. Do it through what you're saying and the questions you're asking, because there's more of a probability that you're differentiating yourself through something you're wearing. It's going to come back on you later.
All right, thank you.
Now, and I will acknowledge that I now sound like your father or maybe your grandfather, but the reality is I'm more likely to be the guy sitting across the table from you than one of your peers. You guys are all millennials. Right? It's a term you may not like, but it's very easy for me to use it to describe you as a generation, and you are taking over. Okay, Generation X runs Wall Street. Right? Baby boomers run most other industries, but Generation X, my generation, runs Wall Street. But we are half the size of you. You will take over in a couple of years. In like 3 years, you're going to be 60% of the workforce. Okay? So it is a dramatic shift that's happening, but right now, I'm still the boss. So what I think does matter more than what you think when it comes to decision making today. I do think you're right. There's a shift happening, right? And it will happen probably quicker, maybe not in fashion, but it'll happen quicker in financial services because the baby booming generation has already retired, right? So the shift will be faster. My generation will get overrun very quickly. I can have a whole discussion with you over a drink sometime if you want about the psychology of being Gen X in business because it kind of sucks. We had to come in and learn the baby boomers' rules, and then we thought we were in charge, and now we have to learn the millennials' rules because you guys are going to take over. But right now, those still are the social norms of Wall Street. If you've got a reason to own a dozen suits and you got a couple of them that look like this one, right, you might get away with it coming in because you wear a suit every day and they're all cut to measure and it works. But if you own one or two suits, make it a gray or a blue suit, okay? Wear a white shirt or a blue shirt, wear a red tie or a blue tie. You're unlikely to impress somebody in a positive way in fashion. You might, but you're unlikely to offend anybody in a blue suit, gray suit, white shirt, blue shirt, red tie, blue tie. Like, I wouldn't wear blue, but put something in there. The other big one, and George always mentioned it, and I forgot so far today, white socks. Don't wear white socks in a suit. I don't care if you take the white socks, take them out to the driveway and spray paint them black that morning, get a pair of black socks. Black socks, shoes match the belt, and dark suit. Anything else on dress? Wealth management, you might get away with it, right, Steve?
No. No. I just don't see the risk reward. It's not worth it to, you differentiate yourself between what you say, I would look the part because first impression definitely matters.
No, and certainly if somebody talks to you in an interview and references some place they spoke, ask them to say, you know, can I get a copy of that, or is there a way I can find out more about what you said, or can I get the text of your speech? Or those are all reasonable requests. And more importantly, what it does is reminds the interviewer of what you talked about, right? Because what you're trying to do, as much as I do appreciate thank you notes, and as few as I do get, it is really nice when I can really remember who it was I was speaking to. So that if I meet you at some alumni event in the future and you remind me, you know, and I remember your name, that's a helpful association. So, answer? Any different? I mean, I certainly wouldn't be offended if somebody asked me if they could get a copy of, and if I don't have it, I don't have it. But.
And it is really important to do that thank you note. It is a differentiator, and a lot of people don't do it. You know, I spoke at a Merrill Lynch event a couple months ago. Got a few thank yous, and a few people actually, I've recognized some faces in this room, we actually grabbed coffee afterwards because they followed up, and not even the first time, I might ignore you the first time, they followed up again. And then we grabbed coffee, networked, because I'm not going to refer somebody to any of my peers or my friends who I don't think is a good fit, because it's a reflection directly on me. So differentiating yourself, follow up is very important, and that thank you card, we recently hired an intern. We liked two candidates a lot. It was a flip of a coin. One didn't send a thank you, so they didn't get the internship. So it's really important, just the follow-up is, and that's what I do. What you guys are trying to do, finding a job, is what I do every day. I'm constantly networking with people. It's a numbers game. I meet somebody, they might introduce me to somebody else. They might introduce me to somebody else. So I'm constantly, and I just built a big network of people that I talk to. So it's, it's very important for you.
For those of you who used any resources at Nova to get an internship, because Steve and I'll stay silent now.
I use the alumni. I mean, it's as simple as that. And of course, the Clay Center in the back. I use Bloomberg terminals. I mean, everything is here. It's at your fingertips. You might as well use it. I would say the most important thing, I think, why the school is worth, as much as it costs to go here each year, is the alumni. And so make sure you guys use it, reach out to people, try to get involved, go to as many different events as you can, and constantly stay in contact. I'll tell you, when I wouldn't say the only reason that I'm at Goldman, but one of the larger reasons I'm at Goldman is because when I committed to play baseball at Villanova, I reached out to a guy named Justin Gamelick, my junior year of high school, and he remembered that. And we stayed in contact, and I'm at Goldman, and he's my boss. So the Villanova presence goes a long way.
Yeah, Tommy hit it on the head, but I would just add, I think it's important to just find a mentor here. It's the only reason I found my way into the job that I did. I had a guy who was in my fraternity who I interviewed, who was part of what we had to do in the fraternity, but I interviewed him, and I asked him, what do you do? And he said, investment banking. And so I had no idea what that was. And he basically walked me through it. And for the next two, and then he did MSF, so 3 years, he was my resource here. And he was a guy, not 20 years older than me, but a guy literally a couple years older than me that I could relate to, who was going through the process just 2 years ahead of me. So I was just mimicking his every step and then taking what he did well and then kind of implementing it into my arsenal to get better. Joining societies is the other major thing you have to do, especially if you're a freshman, sophomore. If you're in the Equity Society, the head of Equity Society used to send me, he'd be like, hey, give me your resume. I've got an opportunity at Goldman. They've only given it to the Equity Society. It's not going through the school. It's just, hey, reach out to your two best people and send me their resumes. So you have to join societies. You have to reach out to the seniors, get to know them. They're the ones with the great networks they've already built, and just replicate.
The last thing I'll add to that is when you leave here, you'll have to turn that around and start paying it back, and you'll start getting onto Bill Donnell's email distributions. You'll find out about every job on Wall Street that's available only to Villanova students, Villanova grads, Villanova alumni, Villanova networks. There's a whole private job market that goes around just the emails that Bill has, and I don't know how many tens of thousands of people must be on his distribution. Basketball season gets a little bit overwhelming because we get every day, every newspaper in the Philadelphia area summarized in an email about what happened with Wildcats last night, and then there's a whole section on jobs and alumni networks and, you know, contact lists. And then if you're a fraternity brother of his, like I am, you also get the whole fraternity alumni network, all the jobs and contacts that come there too. This school has an amazing alumni network. Use it. The other thing I'd suggest, as you talk to the upperclassmen, is talk to the seniors about how they got their job last summer. Right? Talk to the juniors about what they're doing to prep for it. I mean, how many of you are freshmen and sophomores? Awesome. Because you haven't failed the test yet. All right? You still got a chance. So talk to your, you know, if you're in a fraternity, you're in a sorority, you're in a society, you're in a group, you're active on campus, talk to the people you hang out with about how they did the thing you're trying to do. Right? You don't even have to go as far as the alumni. But trust me, there are tens of thousands of alumni who will help you. Okay? There's a question back here somewhere. Yeah, go ahead. The most impactful decisions are not the ones made in the 22 minutes that I actually talk to somebody or listen to them talk. It's what did they do to get to know me beforehand or after? What did they do to network? I don't do every interview Morgan Stanley does here on campus. I come down once in a while and do them. But what I do is I make myself available to Villanova students all the time for networking. And I don't know, Ann, when did you reach out to me? Sophomore year? Yeah. So Ann talked to me for almost 2 years before she got a job working for me last summer. The reason that internship happened last summer is because Ann kept calling, kept talking, kept catching up with me when I was on campus. Those are the things that really stand out to me, okay? In the 22-minute conversation, I want to know, are you somebody I want to spend 12 or 14 hours a day sitting next to, okay? Work has gotten a little better, at least on my side of the business. We're probably not 14 hours a day that much. But occasionally it is, and that's the time when you really want to make sure you can sit next to this person for 14 hours. All right, you can do anything for 8 hours. But when you got to sit by next to somebody for 14 hours a day, you want to actually be able to sit with them. You want to know that they're going to carry their own weight. They're going to be a team player. And so is it somebody who can tell me how they've done that? Can they talk to me about how they've worked with difficult people and made it tolerable? Those are the types of questions that I ask because it's about personality. Some of being here makes it somewhat self-selecting. You're smart. You're here. Right? I've got some metrics that I can look at that can judge your intelligence reasonably well. What's your GPA? How'd you do on your SATs? Right? And then what course of study are you following? And then can you tell me why? Right? I want to figure out how your brain works, what makes you tick. How about any of you guys? Things that real big like clinchers for you or how about the alternative, complete turnoffs? Leslie looked like she had something for the other side.
I would just say never underestimate both the pre-interview reception, so always make an effort to go to those if you're interviewing, and also don't underestimate the people sitting not in the interviewer's room but the ones outside. After you interview, we all talk to each other. They ask our opinions. So you can really make or break your impression before you even step into that interview room. So if you say something that stands out to me, at the pre-reception, if it's down at Yang Ming or somewhere near campus, I guess they're closed now, I heard, then that's a really good thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the interview room. You're going to get your job probably not there. You're going to get it somewhere else.
Yeah, I think the luck part played out in you getting selected for an interview, right? The way you stack the deck in your favor is just that. It's the analyst panel. When I come down in the fall and I bring four or five recent grads, almost always all Villanova grads, back here to talk about what it's like working for operations at Morgan Stanley, and we come down this fall, go to that event. I'll get 15 or 20 people show up, right? You're not sitting in a room with this, you literally, it's 15 or 20 of you with five or six of us. It's a great opportunity to meet some people. Right? It's a great opportunity to see somebody who you literally might know from when you were in school here with them, right? When they were in school with you, rather, because they've got a job now. Right, making that connection, talking to them, and then they go talk you up when they go back to work. Right? And then when your name comes through on the resume drop for interview selection, you get picked first round. Okay, and then you got to go hold your own in the 30-minute interviews. But while you're doing that, the analysts that are sitting out in that holding area, right, I call them handlers, they're watching you, right, and they're listening to the questions you ask them. They're also listening to how you behave. Right? You walk out of the interview talking smack about the interview. Trust me, they're remembering who said what. Right? If you come out and you make some great complimentary statements about, wow, you thought it really went well, the interview did a really good job asking questions, you got to talk about this, this, and this, maybe you repeating something you thought was impactful from the interview makes them repeat it at the summary session. Because at the end of the day, we sit around with a pizza and a couple of beers and decide who we're going to call back tomorrow. Right? And then tomorrow at lunchtime, maybe we don't have the beers because we're going to drive back to New York, but we're having pizza again, and we decide who's getting a job. And those decisions are literally made an hour or so. So you haven't even sent your thank you note yet, and we're making the decision about whether or not to call you back. But I guarantee you, more often than not, what Steve was talking about happens. Right? Got that coin toss. We're not really sure. All right, we'll go back. We'll make the decision on Monday or Tuesday. Well, guess what? I get a letter in the mail on Monday, and I don't get one from the other person. On Tuesday, we make that decision. And it's easy. I'll let the 11s and 12s answer first.
I would say email, just because it gets there more quickly. We are making these decisions very quickly about hiring. Obviously, we'll keep it forever if we'd like you to go back to it later. But if my email gets there tomorrow and your letter gets there in 4 days, that hiring decision could have been made on day 3. So I would say go with the email. It's a culture shift change that's going on right now. So some people prefer one, some prefer the other. You just have to be gamble. I would always go with the one that gets there more quickly, personally.
What do you think, Steve?
I like both.
Yeah.
You need to send an email just because if the decision's being made in 24 hours, obviously the handwritten note probably won't get there, but I think a handwritten note is a little bit more personal. And if you reflect on something in the conversation in that note, look forward to seeing you soon at a Nova event, something.
Yeah.
I just think it goes a little bit further and it becomes a little bit more memorable.
So I get about between 300 and 400 emails a day. I've never missed a thank you email. Okay. Meaning I see what it is. I know what it is. And if it's gonna mean something in the next 3 hours, I'll remember it. Right? And that's the context of when it matters. But I don't throw away the thank you notes. Right? They move with me from office to office, from job to job, they stay with me. And I literally will go through them when people ask me for favors. I'll say, well, have they ever thanked me before they ask me for this favor? Okay. And I think the answer is absolutely both. And in both, I think it's even more important in the email, but it's also important for the handwritten note. But the email one, tell me why I should remember you. Right? What did we talk about? What was the thing that you walked away from the interview as your little nugget, and that's what you want to remind me of? Because 3 hours from now, 4 hours from now, after I've met with 12 people, I need a prompt to tell me why it is that I want to talk to you again. So I think the email can't be a blast thank you to the 3 people you met with, right? It's got to be, what did we talk about that's going to make me remember you, right? If you do that, it can be very effective in the immediate decision making, but buying that long-term option on my time, right, costs a handwritten note. It's cheap. You know, stamps are still less than a dollar, right? Now I sound really old, right?
It said that we're entitled when we enter the workforce. How would you say that we could avoid expressing that persona? What do you see as the biggest problems when you hire from universities?
So as somebody who's spent a lot of time, and we've spent a lot of time as managing director group at Morgan Stanley talking about it, that sounds like an assessment made by my generation to qualify what you guys are doing. I don't think you're actually approaching life with the air of entitlement that we think you are. Okay? So if that isn't talking around your question, I don't know what is. I don't believe you mean to come in thinking you're entitled to things, but you have very different expectations as a generation for what life is going to provide, what life is going to give you, what you're going to get from life than my generation does. My generation is a much more cynical generation, much more self-reliant. Does not believe society is going to do anything to save us. We gave up faith in things like Social Security and politics and politicians and government a long time ago. We grew up looking at faces of our peers as missing children on the back of milk cartons. Nixon was impeached. That was our childhood. The end of Vietnam, hyperinflation in the 70s, divorce rates skyrocketing. Like, just, we got very cynical. Your generation doesn't approach life the same way ours does, and so we're having a hard time interpreting what that means. But I agree with you. There is a perception that the way you behave in the workforce is different. It is my belief that we are going to have to get used to you, because you're going to replace us very quickly. I do think the more aware you are of that, and the more aware of who is my boss, and what has my boss's experience been, and now we're getting to why I was arts and science major, not a business major. This is more philosophy, right? Be aware of who you're talking to. Be aware of what my experiences are. Be aware of what I've done to get where I am, and recognize that you may want to take a different path, but be respectful of what I'm asking. Understand why I'm asking. The things that drive me nuts are people who spent 6 months working for me and come and tell me they've learned everything they can possibly learn in this division, and it's time for them to move to sales and trading. And I look at them and go, well, shit, I must be an idiot, because I've been here for 22 years and I'm still learning. Okay? Understand what it is you're saying, and understand what my motivation would be and what you want to get. Right? Help me understand you. That was a very deep philosophical answer to your question. It's a good question. I think just showing that level of awareness helps. Right? Recognize that I'm going to think about your actions differently than you meant them. You've probably been doing that for 20 years with your parents. Right? They've definitely misinterpreted everything you've tried to do for the last 20 years. Okay? That's what we do. Have a different view or things to add?
Support to have a really good attitude. You know, if you're asked to do something that you don't want to do, just do it, and put a smile on your face and get the job done, because that shows. I know it's not the best work in the world sometimes, but it just shows that you're willing to do anything, and then you will get rewarded eventually. But yeah, you just have to have a good attitude. Quick example, my associate yesterday, we were preparing to do an event, so it's a lot of compliance, paperwork compliance is getting a little bit crazy. So, I asked her to just prepare these lists, do this, and I got, oh, really? And that's the last thing I wanted to hear. I wanted to get done so I could do my job and just keep bringing in more business and talking to people. So good attitude goes a long, long way. You'd be surprised.
I don't know, Tom, would you take offense to somebody who's also interviewing Morgan Stanley?
Not at all. I think it's great. I think it's perfectly fine to be open and honest about who you're interviewing with. They should be aware of it. I think, if I found out that someone was interviewing at Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan and I thought this candidate was great, it's only going to make me want them more, because I don't want them to go to Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan. So yeah, I think it's absolutely fine letting them know where you're interviewing.
Yeah, I agree. It helps set expectations as well, right? I think it's great. If you're interviewing at Goldman, that means you're probably a pretty competent candidate, and it's good that we're actually going after you and trying to get you to join our firm. But what I would say is you want to set expectations. So if I just think you're interviewing at Jefferies and you told me it's the only place I'm interviewing for, well, I'm going to pound the table really, really hard for you when it comes to, is it you or the Duke kid? And I'm like, this guy's only interviewing at Jefferies. He's told me multiple times. And then I find out you get an offer at Goldman. That's going to reflect poorly on you, but also reflect very poorly on the university. So I think you got to be very open about it. There's no downside, really, in my opinion, to saying I'm interviewing at all these firms.
I think the only qualification I'll give to that, and because when I come here for operations, I interview people from lots of different majors. So I do interview lots of arts and science students, lots of engineering students. And they're often looking at things like GE management program, the Johnson & Johnson program, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, maybe Barclays down in Delaware. They're looking at a bunch of things. If they all seem logically aligned, I got no problem with hearing the whole laundry list if I ask that question. I think there is a potential risk to saying you're not interviewing with anybody else, because either I question why you're not interviewing with anybody else, or you're not being truthful with me. And neither of those is a good outcome. So I think you probably want some diversity. I do think if you've already interned with Jefferies and that's the job you want, and you've been working this network for 3 years, like, okay, there's a compelling reason to have that very focused approach. But I would be nervous, especially if I'm here interviewing a senior and they're only interviewing with me. Why? Because that's kind of crazy. But flip side is if they're interviewing for a pharmaceutical sales job and an engineering firm in Chicago and with me in New York, it's like, okay, where's your direction? What do you want to do? Right? What have you done to figure out where you want to be? And I recognize at 20 years old, you have no idea where you want to be, but you got to have some general direction ideas. You got to have tried some things, and this is where you use your alumni network, you talk to people, you figure out, because I don't want to know that you're still doing some soul searching while I'm thinking about committing probably upwards of $150,000 to $200,000 in investment in you before you become productive. And so, you know, putting it in that context, I think, is important. You know, some firms hire numbers. So they'll take the Army approach. Lots and lots of soldiers, and then we'll figure out who the officers are, right? Some, though, and most of us in investment banking, financial services divisions, typically are trying to hire the best. And so we want very focused, because we're going to invest a lot of time and money in you, we want you to have a payback. And so I want some surety that the direction is something you've actually thought about. It's not like you applied for every job available at Villanova. But I do think it's okay to tell me who you're interviewing with. Just think about what that answer tells me. Yes. You can write thank you. I don't have filters specifically set on my emails. Maybe you guys do, and you're better at more efficiently using electronic communication. But I don't. I think today's interview, thank you, thanks from Villanova, any of those things can work. The reality is, if you're sending the email, it's the day of the interview. If you're writing the note, it's written and mailed the day of the interview. Writing me an email 3 days after the interview kind of defeats the purpose of the email, because I don't know why this person just sent me an email, because there was no prompt to keep you stuck in my head 12 hours after the interview. We got a specifically catchy or working subject line. Oh, Leslie, what's your greatest weakness?
What's my greatest weakness? I have no weaknesses. So I work at Bank of America now. I know sometimes that I can be a little bit, you know, I like to do things and get them done by myself, so I have to be able to relinquish control. But part of that's because I am very organized, and I just have to be able to mix that along with working with other people to stay on task. So being able to use communication skills really helps me to negate that weakness that I have of kind of having to have a little bit more control.
I don't know. It's a classic interview question. I don't understand the value people necessarily get from it. I know lots of people do ask it. I don't think you can avoid it. You have to answer it. I do agree with Leslie, thinking about how you might identify something that somebody could interpret to be a development area, and then what you've done to develop yourself there, or what you've done to provide some air cover for that. For me, I mean, it's easy because I'm at the senior level and I've already got the job. You know, there are certain parts of my job that I hate doing, so I just hire people who work for me who love doing them. Right? My type of job, operations, is, you know, there's three, you know, kind of, you can take probably any job and break the groups into, you know, three or four skill sets that are necessary to be successful. And the reality is you have to have all of them, but you probably only are passionate and love one or two of them. Recognizing that somebody else loves the other ones means that's how you build a team effectively, right? So my management team is not seven people who look like me or who think like me, who act like me. Right? There's seven people who do things very different than me, because I already do the stuff that I'm good at really well. Right? They do the stuff I'm not so good at really well, and together we make a hell of a team. being able to recognize that that's what you need to do in every situation in life, and find people who are better at the things you're not good at, who like doing the things you don't like doing, right, is how you build an effective team, is a great way to talk around the fact that I have weaknesses and I didn't tell you any of them. Right? So. Nobody has weaknesses in sales and trading and fixed income, though, right? Most of them are personality related. Yes, sir.
So my question is, aside from dressing, is there any social or behavioral norms that you think you push it down?
The three martini lunch is over. I don't know how many of you guys saw The Wolf. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
I mean, those days are long gone, as you see in, I mean, I wasn't around for them, but I can tell you right now.
I wasn't even around for them.
I don't think there are any particular cultural norms that I'd stress, but coming in, I think we said it a bunch of times tonight, you just want to be the person that's the first one in, the last one out. When I first came in, people would say, that really doesn't matter anymore, but I think it does, and it will always matter. And coming from Villanova and finding a way to differentiate yourself versus those that are, also in your analyst class from Princeton, Yale, Harvard, that's one way of doing it, outworking people. So that's all I'd say.
The dress code one, we kind of joke about it every year when we come down and do this presentation. It's not that all of us actually like wearing the suits and the shirt and ties that we do, right? You guys don't dress like this on the weekends, right? I don't. I'm as often in jeans and leather riding a motorcycle, or in camouflage hunting something, depending on what season it is. I never wear a suit on the weekends, but it's a uniform. I go to work, and it's the uniform I wear to work. Recognizing that, and over time, your generation will change parts of that. But parts of it you'll learn to identify with and wear as a part of pride in the uniform. As I said, it has changed, right? Ties have gotten more colorful. They've gotten more fun. Suits have gotten more trendy. People do go through the fashion cycles in suits. And then there's people like me who look at it and go, no, I'm wearing a suit every day for the rest of my career. I'm not going to move my wardrobe every year with a new fashion. Plus, I don't really have a model's body, so I just wear a traditional suit. You guys will move the needle a little bit, but that's part of recognizing it is a culture, right? You're joining an organization, you're joining an industry that spends a lot of time together. And if you're going to buck all the rules and all the traditions and all the customs before you even start, I'm not sure I want you in my club. That's what goes on in people's head when they're meeting with you, thinking about, do I want this as the next recruit to our industry? Does he get that there's a history here? Does he get that there's a culture that I'm going to be part of? And are they going to respect that? Right? Then once you're in the club, you can start trying to change the rules. But you got to get in first. I think we got time for one more, and then we're going to do some wrap up from a couple of the other societies. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead, Leslie. Thank God we got a woman on the panel.
Again, especially with the guys, you don't want to stand out in a negative way. So, make sure. I would honestly, for interviews, go with pants, skirts just a little bit too iffy. Make sure it is kind of, right above your knee if you're going to do a skirt. Don't do anything too low cut. No flashy jewelry. Just keep it as simple as possible. And definitely the full suit as well. So either a matching jacket and bottoms. You can go with a suit skirt if you want to, but I would really just keep it more, jacket, pants, nice shirt. My industry is a little bit different. We're not as much, women don't have to wear the button down, so a nice blouse, but again, not low cut, no fancy jewelry, just as simple as possible.
Wear stuff your dad would let you wear.
Another one, if you with your hair, that's a big thing for girls. If you know you play with your hair, pull it back. So little things like that. You don't want anything that'll be distracting you during the interview. So that's another one. So.
I haven't had that problem quite some time. Probably since I left Villanova. Michelle, are we good?
So we just have a couple of points to make. First of all, we want to thank the panelists for coming down today. I mean, they really take time out of their days to recruit for us. They want us. We are really smart, and they know that. We just have to give them a reason to hire us, and that's what they're here for. And that's everybody. I expect everybody to reach out, not just to them, but to all the alumni that we have coming down the campus, because it's definitely in your best interest. So for that, let's give them a round of applause. So why I'm up here? So as they said, getting involved in school and clubs, and in particular with the business school, is very, very important. So me specifically, I'm the co-president of the Wall Street Society. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. It's only the second semester that's in operation, and we're growing right now. So basically, we are a current events club at our core. So like they said, we are very, very smart people. We are very textbook smarts. But when we go to interviews, we don't always connect the dots. So that's what we do at the Wall Street Society. Guarantee you, at least some of your interviews, they're going to ask you, what's your opinion on China? What's your opinion on immigration? And how does that relate to the business world? And that's things that we talk about in the Wall Street Society. So for that reason alone, I really anticipate this club growing in numbers. Again, it's only the second semester. We're really trying to recruit people that want to have educated discussions about a lot of these hot topics, because it's going to help you, one, be able to interview better, and two, just have a better understanding of the world around you and how it relates to the careers that you're going to go into. And for that, I'm going to hand over to Sean.
Hey, guys. Just want to say thanks again to the panelists and, of course, the Clay Center for setting this up. My name is Sean McKernan. I'm the president of a new club called Alternative Investment Society, and what we basically do is focus on the opportunities and specific strategies that are implemented on the buy side, so hedge funds, private equity, and venture capital. And I'll hand it off to Cindy.
I'm a little short, so. Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks again to the panelists. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks to Clay Center. Brad said it really well himself, so I'll be really quick. I'm Cindy, co-president of Mergers and Acquisition Society. We focus specifically on investment banking, and then we also delve a little bit into private equity and venture capital. So with that, I'll turn it over to the networking reception so everyone can make their way over there. And thanks again.
Wanted real quickly to thank all you guys. Thank you guys again for coming out. Thank you guys for coming here. Do want to invite you to stay for the reception. There's some refreshments back there for you. But just to let you know, we do have alumni employers here that want to meet you. They've come here specifically to meet you. So it'd be great if you could stick around for a little bit, give them a little bit of your time, get to know them. I think everybody up here mentioned the importance of building your network and getting to know people and starting to get your face out there. So this is a perfect opportunity for that. So with that, head on back, get some food, get to know some people, and thanks again for coming out.